Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. I'm here today with Sarah Gwynn. We listen, act, and transform. Sarah specializes in working with clients as they navigate their nervous system to strengthen their mind, body, and heart. Sarah understands that many of our physical and emotional experiences are interconnected. She believes in a holistic approach to wellness and works with her clients to build a deeper understanding of their own bodies and minds. Through this process, she helps clients develop tools to manage stress and other challenges that can impact daily life. When working with couples, Sarah focuses on building emotional equity, a term that she uses to describe the balance of emotional investment in a relationship by helping partners communicate more effectively and build a deeper connection. Sarah helps clients create a foundation of trust and respect that can withstand the ups and downs of life. Sarah's approach is grounded in compassion and empathy. She believes that everyone has the potential to grow and heal. The coaching she provides can be a powerful tool for transformation. Whether working with individuals or couples, Sarah is committed to helping your clients live their best lives. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so glad you said yes.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sarah, I love reading your bio, but I was particularly struck by the phrase emotional equity. Can you expound on that a little bit more for me?
Yeah, so when I'm working with couples, really it can be any relationship, parent to child, you know, partner to partner. But if I look at a relationship like a bank, right, and you've got, you're in the black or the red, right? But if you've got like $3 million and you lose, I don't know, $10,000, right? It's not hard to get back into the black. It's just not. But if I'm got $100 and I lose $5,000, it's going to take me a while to get back into the black. And relationships a lot of times start in the red, especially when they come to see somebody, right? The body may be on hospice, what I would say the relationship, right? And so what I talk about emotional equity is like, can you put in dollars into your relationship bank? And that can be also to yourself, right? But if you're spending more money, you're taking more than you're giving, you're going to have a very hard time building emotional equity, good faith with your partner. You're in your beloved's hands, right? We forget we're in each other's care. And there's something so satisfying about being able to go, no, I want to deposit, right? It could be a dollar. It could be $5. A dollar goes a long way if you do that enough. And so having that analogy makes such a impact on people when you can see, what does it feel like? Did I just make a withdrawal from my relationship bank, right? And so when I build equity into a relationship or into my life, I mean, it's full, it's robust, it's whole. And for me, that's the point of partnership, right? Is to feel safe and secure with one another and to be in each other's care. And so that's what we talk about is like, how do you put deposits into each other? How do you put deposits into yourself? And so I think it's wildly important. And I just love the term. It's such a great visual.
Yeah. And that was such a great analogy too. And I got to thinking, so what would, I bet it looks different for each relationship, but what are some examples of ways people deposit and ways people withdraw from relationships?
Oh man, that's such a good question. So it's so interesting how it's like making a deposit is so easy. It's so easy. And we have this idea of like, there's no way that I could, like, I can actually put money into my partner's bank, and really putting it into our bank is so easy. Like, one of the bigger things, if we're at a deficit or we're in a fragile time in our relationship, just owning it, just saying, you know what, I need you to forgive me for blank. Forgive me for not remembering to bring home your sweet tea, you know, that you asked me to on Thursday, right? Now, you've just made a deposit, right? Or, hey, I can see on my part, like just preparing, being there in each other's care, right? And so I think by doing those little things, right, it's an energetic flow. The other partner then wants to come towards, and it becomes this beautiful infinity sign where we're actually in the flow together. The withdrawal is really easy, especially if we're salty or we've got contempt, right? And we don't feel, we're just naturally doing it, you know, where it's not looking or making eye contact. It's not respecting the other person. I mean, sometimes it's just fundamental respect. But if my partner is telling me something and I'm looking down at my phone, right, I'm making a withdrawal because I'm now not even giving them the decency to look at them, right? That's on the very little low level. I mean, you have bigger withdrawals, meaning I don't show up when you ask me to. I'm not being careful and kind and wanting to know your blueprint. And with that kind of thing, then it's just selfish. Right now, I'm just about me and I'm not thinking about us. And then we armor up. And so I think that's when we really start to get to a place where we're both making withdrawals instead of making attempts to move towards going separate. And that's when we get dangerous territory.
Yeah. And I could see how easy it could be to make withdrawals. I'm just thinking of it's such a great analogy of the bank analogy and how you're in Target and you only went in there for one thing and you end up spending $200 and then you look at your account and you're like, oh my gosh, how did I get into the deficit when it was just, I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't intentional. I didn't take in a shopping list and stick with it kind of deal. And that's how we make those withdrawals. That was such a great analogy, Sarah.
It's so beautiful when we pause and how big the deposits can be without even, it doesn't take a lot, you know, there's a, just like, an example is if you're the one carrying the mental load in the morning and your partner comes in and says, hey, before I do blank, do you need anything from me? You can say, you may not need anything. No, I don't. But thank you so much for asking. It just made a deposit because now we're a team, right? That was so simple. And that alone can make such a difference if we start moving in that way.
Absolutely. I love that. Sarah, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show was because I do know about your diverse background and all of the different modalities that you have been trained in. And so I'm about to ask you about your journey, and I'm hoping you kind of can include all the different ways that you have been trained to do this beautiful work. But before we even go there, why don't you just like, what did you want to be when you grew up, and then how did you get into this particular healing journey?
I wanted to do something in mothering. You know, I grew up in a staunch evangelical culture, you know, pretty much the stay-at-home mom type, but I always had this drive to be of help and care. And there was something powerful about women who were giving birth. And I knew eventually, always somewhere deep in my soul, I knew I would work internationally. But my goal was to be a midwife. That was what I wanted to be. And then it journeyed all the way here to be a midwife of the heart, right? Like just to doula. I think we need so many doulas in our life. And that's kind of where I landed, if you will. So,
yeah, I love that. And for those who may not know the term doula, give me a description of, and I know you're a doula in so many different ways, but give me a definition, I'll say, of what a doula is for those who may not know that term.
Well, a doula is it depends on if you're a birth doula, right? A birth doula is like a birth coach who's going to help with the birthing partner, the one that's caring the baby, right? So, and a lot of times for the non-caring partner too. We end up actually being a doula more for the non-caring partner than we do for the partner that is carrying the baby. Though it's to help you breathe. It's to get through your hardest time, right? It's to be their cheerleader, to go all the way to the end till they have birthed this beautiful baby. And I became a birth doula, and then I went into death work. And it's amazing the amount of the parallels, because it is a birth for sure. So we're just of help is what a doula is just a big, as a coach.
Through life transitions. Mm-hmm. Big life transitions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your journey. Start from wherever you want to, and how did you end up where you are now?
Yeah. I went into thinking about midwifery and got married really young, and then had my son at 23. And so I knew I wanted to be close to home with him. So went into fitness management and was going to school at UNA, and then decided that I wanted to go into personal training. After my second son was born, he was born at the farm, which is the, you know, midwife mecca in Tennessee, Summertown, Tennessee. That was a wonderful experience. My second son was. And so after that, I was like, I know I want to be a help, right? So I still had my fitness background. I was doing some personal training. And then I became a birth doula. And then we moved a little bit. And I started to become a personal trainer for women. And I had a little studio in the back of my house, and it grew and grew and grew. And women would come and we would work out, and they would tell me all of these, their deepest, darkest pain, right? And it became a place of a sacred, safe space. And I remember thinking, there's something about this physical world of them doing something, like kind of building a sandcastle with your children and getting them to talk. I never intentionally did that, but it was the space between, and we shared. It was equal, and it felt like a community. And so from there, I remember I said, there's something about the South and women and coming to, like, we need something. They're not talking. No one's talking. And so I wanted to take the physical side of that and mix it with also like verbal processing. But before that, I started a 501c3 called Conquering Life. And it was for women who just to build two, it was two conferences. We had speakers come from all over the country, and we had about 80 to 100 attendees. And we took over downtown Florence, and it was all about from like backpacking and hiking to hormones and sex to like just empowerment. It was a beautiful, two beautiful weekends. And so as that grew, so did kind of my background in the desire to continue to go, there's something here. And it's, for me, I am always going after collective joy. I think it's just incredible. If you have people together cooking, you have people together talking, you have people together like going towards this healing thing, it's just empowering. And so from that point, then we started another 501c3 for rising fourth through eighth grade girls to help them kind of learn how to do things kind of the same way with the older women. So we just, it kind of bulldozed that way till I went into the certified Wayfinder life coaching school with Martha Beck. And so I finished that program. And then I got into trauma-informed weight training certification. And so for me, you take your fight, flight, freeze response, and you create movement with that, right? So like if I am a hyper arousal or I am a fight response, I live at the top of my window of tolerance above it, right? So you would do movement to bring it down. So that looks like farmer carries or planks or rows. You want to come down into your window of tolerance. If you're a freeze response, you're going to do things like explosive, you know, ice baths, slam balls, burpees to get you up into the window of tolerance. And so if you mix verbal processing and you mix movement or somatic work you're able to create this natural flow with your nervous system that is regulation. And so as I started to do that, I was interested and I took a level one Wim Hof certification of ice plunging. You know, the paradox process is a whole process on how to create to teach your brain a coding to help your body learn to basically create the reality you want to create in your life, you know? And so I'm in a somatic embodiment course now for it's a 4-month certification. And so with that, it's been an incredible journey to finally get to this place where we're doing rage work. We're getting it out of our body and we're doing inner child healing. I mean, to have someone do a self hug, I mean, it just feels good, you know? It just feels good to the heart and we forget that, you know? And so I have become, for better or for worse, it feels like a midwife of the heart. And that feels really beautiful to be able to stand here and say. So that's kind of my journey. And there's still so many other, I mean, I have taken master classes with Jason Gaddis, master classes with Stan Tatkin. I have taken courses and certifications and, you know, my desire is to learn how to be the best version of myself. It really started for me. It was never for other people. It was like, I know there's more out here and how do I become this version to explore, to stay curious and to heal. So.
Sarah, that was so beautiful. That is so beautiful. There's two things I've never heard of. And you can dig into both or either one. The farm, which is where you had your second son. I would love to hear more about that. But really, what really blew me away, and I'm all in the trauma-informed world, I thought, was trauma-informed weight training. And you did such a good job of describing a little bit of, you know, what the type of client, the movements they would need. But how would a client even know that that's the type of weight training that they should seek out, right? I'm wondering, how would they know, oh, maybe I need trauma-informed weight training? And so maybe going into what is the farm and then what would the ideal trauma-informed weight training client be?
Okay. Well, the farm is, Ida Mae Gaskins came, she basically in California back in the day, and I'm probably going to butcher her story, but it was illegal, you know, the way that they wanted us to birth was illegal. They were just, you know, basically taking babies out of women. They were waking them up and just being like, here's your baby. And a group of these hippies from California said, nope, we're not doing it. And they got in a caravan and came all the way to Summertown, Tennessee. They bought this land. They started basically a commune. And women from all over the world have come to have babies at what they called the farm. And so was, I think of it, 5 to 7 midwives, and they had different homes that you would birth in. And it was as like care, like you were in your midwife's care. And I stayed with Lyle in a house at the farm for 3 weeks. We were able to stay there for that long and it was magical. And so, I mean, you're talking all over the world, people are traveling here. And she created a place for women to give birth the way that they wanted. And there's a lot of controversy behind, you know, birthing in one way or the other. For me, it was the body knows. And I'm really careful with the way that I instruct my doula clients when I was, you know, we're not all one way or the other, right? We have to find that balance. And so what is right for you? It's not hospitals are wrong or right. And, you know, giving birth at home or at a birth center is right or wrong. It's really like, what do you feel the safest in? What is your, you know, your physician or your midwife feel the safest? And then you be the advocate for yourself of knowing what's right for you. And so the farm gives you that option and they're really, really informed. Some incredible midwives have come out of there. So yeah, that's the farm.
I love that. Yeah. And before you move into the trauma-informed weight training question, I've been hearing, and I didn't hear it until this last year, how important the birth story is, not just for the baby who gets to hear it, who becomes the adult, who becomes my client, and they love sharing their birth story, but also for the mama and how important having a birth story that they were able to own and be in control of is. And I think you just did an amazing job of describing why that is important.
Yeah. It's like, it is because it's theirs. It's their story. It's our birthing story. And it's with anything that's ours, right? Can be also oozed with trauma if it's taken, especially such a sacred thing as birth, right? And so the beauty of natural birth or having a doula or having your own agency and birth story, whether it be good or bad, same thing for a death, you get one death and that's it. So get to have it how you want it, hopefully. And that's theirs, right? So it's good, bad, or the ugly. It's their story, and they need to be able. We need to be able to talk about it. So,
absolutely, I love that. So beautiful, so beautiful. So then, what is the ideal trauma-informed weight training client? How would they know that that would be a right fit for them?
Well, you know, it's so funny because I think everybody needs a little bit of trauma-informed movement. I mean, it's like what somatic work is. The body keeps the score, you know, as we all know, the beautiful book. And, you know, Peter Levine, who created the, you know, he with another practitioner, the Embodiment Lab, there's so much work with your body. And so even if you came from a secure functioning household, you still you still have a nervous system. So, you know, if you notice that you do a freestanding squat with a bar on your back and you start to have a panic attack, you start to feel panic and anxiety, probably a sign you need to do a different movement. You probably need I think every physical trainer should be trauma informed. You know, just touching on the shoulder, just, you know, if we talk about regulating, if you start to feel panic when you're doing a squat or when you're doing a push-up and it's bringing things up inside of you, someone who knows, hey, I need to reason with you first. I need to relate. Well, actually, I need to relate to you first. Then we can get to regulation. Then I can reason, right? I can't say, well, you know, this is fine. No, it makes sense. Why don't we walk back and forth with a weight in our hand so we can calm down? And then we'll come back to that if you feel comfortable, right? The brain will come back online and then we can have a conversation, you know, but even in session, if I know that you're a hypervigilant person or a hyper aroused, I'll have them hold a sandbag, right? While we're talking or walking back and forth with a kettlebell. Sometimes they just want to do that just to change the arousal. And it makes a huge difference because when they sit down, you can see the difference from when they're tight to now suddenly they've relaxed and they'll even come forward. And you know they feel safe then when they're coming towards me. You know, there's something so profound about saying your body's safe here too, right? So as far as them, it's more of their bodily cues. How do they know that they need that? How do they seek that out? They're more and more trauma-informed, you know, body workers than there ever used to be. And now it's such a thing. And I'm so grateful that the word is getting out and people are becoming practitioners and clinicians in that industry.
I love it. And so thank you so much for making me aware of it. I did not know. I know about trauma-informed treatment, but I didn't know trauma-informed weight training, which makes absolutely perfect sense. And I agree. All personal trainers should be trauma-informed. You're absolutely right. I, you know, within your journey, you became a death doula. Can you talk about how you moved into that particular arena?
Yeah. One of my birth doula clients became my first death doula client. And she had her daughter at 6 months. After 6 months, she was diagnosed. And, it was the greatest honor of my life to get to walk with her till the very end. And she taught me so much, but I recognized and realized there, you know, I remember I walked into her room. It was the day that she was dying. And I said, hey, how are you? I knew the answer to that question, but she didn't want people to talk about she was dying, right? And she said, for the first time, she said, I'm dying. And I said, I know. So I sat and I whispered in her ear all about the death of her, I mean, the birth of her daughter. And we just talked and she smiled. And there was a time, you know, at 5 hours later, she couldn't speak anymore, right? We had sat vigil with her as she was going to wherever she was going. And she was in acceptance with it. And she had made it all the way to her daughter's third birthday. And the power and the sacredness to be able to walk with someone to the very end till they go home, it was unlike anything I've ever experienced. And I recognized then that death is not anything of what we think it is. And to be able to be like, to give somebody comfort and care at the very end, there's nothing like that for me. So that's how I journeyed there. And I actually love working with the dying because it is, they will teach you the biggest lessons in your life.
I'm curious, you know, I've worked with a lot of hospice social workers. Are death doulas being used in the hospice arena yet?
I think there are some that are finding it necessary, you know. And I think so at the bigger cities, I think they're more available. I think though it is growing. I do believe that. My grandmother's, who was like my mom's, and it just turned out, who was like my mom, but it just turned out to be that. But I worked with the hospice nurses and they were really grateful because the rest of her family wasn't equipped or capable emotionally to make those decisions. And for me, I was able to detach, even though it was my grandmother, to say, no, we need to lower her oxygen. And I had that, I could do that because I was her family. But you could tell the relief of the hospice workers and nurses, because it was like, oh, thank God, you know that this is the best way for her. It's not like, let's keep her alive because she's not here anymore. And so I think it's going to, it's growing. I'll say that.
I hope so. I hope so. And I hope that my hospice social workers are listening. Yeah. And I will get to hear that beautiful experience. It was absolutely beautiful. You know, a big reason, Sarah, that I wanted to do this podcast was to promote the importance of community and collaboration. What are some of the communities that you belong to or have created? And what have you learned about yourself from participating in those communities?
So I've been on all kinds of boards, you know, for domestic violence. You know, I've started 501c3s to help create, you know, spaces and gatherings. I've been involved in the community meal that my local church that I go to does every Monday. And there's something about creating a meal together. Like, there is nothing better. I'm also involved in Al-Anon, you know, so it's like little communities, right, that I am growing in, but also get to have a space in. And it's the thing that like keeps me going, right? I may be able to be a part and of service. And I think that's my work, is how do you be of service? Volunteer work for me is one of the things. You know, there are times where I'm like, well, I'm so tired and I have four children and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And working a program like Al-Anon is part of it, is you're of service, right? Recovery is important. And so for me, that's a necessary thing. And it's something that I hope to have more impact on and to be able to volunteer more and to be a part. But, you know, there's a desire to, well, for me, at least, is collaboration with other organizations that aren't necessarily in my community, but are around my community. And so I think it's important, and it has impacted and shaped me, sometimes in the best ways possible. And sometimes it's been a very big learning lesson. So,
especially dealing with other people. Yeah.
And their views on life. Yes, it's different.
It's different than, especially when we go outside of what we're doing with other like-minded folks, and then we're in these communities that may not have the same views. And so, It definitely if she, I think that relationships are a spiritual journey, you know, and so that being in relationships with folks who aren't like you and may not have the same views as you allows you to be on that particular spiritual journey. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I completely forgot to ask you this, and we weren't really clear, but on your journey, we heard about so many amazing, beautiful things and love the diverse work that you get to do. But where are you now in your journey and where do you want to go?
Well, where I am, like geographically, I am.
Or and where, like, where are you do? What are you doing professionally?
Okay, professionally.
Point?
Yeah. I am, I guess by title, a somatic therapeutic coach for relationships for couples and individuals and families. I do a lot of family work. I have two offices, you know, one in Florence, Alabama, one in Huntsville. And I do a lot of, I work 5 days a week, and we're doing movement. We're doing rage work. We're doing verbal processing. We're getting in the body. And so I love working with couples. You know, I do different things like blow up a balloon and say, play keepy uppy with us and let's create some joy, right? Like, they're like, wait, what? We haven't done this and our kids aren't here. I mean, but like, who doesn't love to play with a balloon, right? And so it might be the first time that they've laughed together, you know? And so how can you, and there's something about that to be a part of it. So to get to do that every day is truly a gift.
Love that. Yeah. It's the honor that I'm so honored to get to do this work. And that's what it feels like. You feel honored to get to do this work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, because I know you personally, but I know a little bit about where you want to go. And I'm wondering, have you thought about that on this journey? Where do you see yourself with all of this experience, diversity in this within this healing journey? Where do you see yourself going from here?
Well, my ultimate goal, if I'm dreaming and manifesting, right, is to have somatic international couples retreats. And, you know, I led a retreat with a beautiful soul and friend of mine 2 Januaries ago in Costa Rica. And it was absolutely incredible. And it was women that they were in their 50s and 60s and all had been through some really hard stuff and big grief. And to see them to come together, I mean, to hike for miles or just to be able just to sit and cry in the yoga room. But at one point we said, we want you to go out in the ocean and we want you to pretend that you're a child again and you're just going to play. And they splashed and laughed and kicked and shoved. And it was incredible. And I recognized and realized the landscape, the beauty of taking just couples away and then to say, no, let's get to work, but in the most pleasurable way possible. You know, there's something about it and something about intimacy, something about connection and joy and taking people to a different location. It's a dream. So.
And it makes people want to go and they want to go and do that kind of thing, especially when they get to do it in a different country. I'm excited for you. I totally see you doing that. And I'm excited for you to do it. Yeah.
Me too.
Sarah, how do you see the work that you do working in tandem with other professionals like social workers?
Well, I think I can't do the work that I do without collaboration. I absolutely think I cannot do it without community. I am not like the only one. For me, it is the one, like, to collaborate. All of my colleagues that I work with are incredible, you know, LPCs or LMSWs or, you know, they come to the mat and we collaborate. And there is something so powerful about it. And so for me, it's a necessary means. And I've seen the joy, like the beauty and the work when there's collaboration, when there's community, when people are saying, hey, they need this. What do you have? Hey, I've got this client. You know, and there's just something about it. Like, it's the learning part. It's the hands and feet. And so for me, I couldn't do it without them. and my colleagues and the community and the women who have gone before me, like yourself, to pave the way, to give the ability of like a therapeutic coach to come on and say, hey, this work is here. And it's because you guys came before us and paved the way for us to be able to collaborate. And I love the work that you're doing because it is creating collaboration within the community.
I appreciate that. I love that. And I wanted so desperately to have you on the show today because I wanted to show social workers other ways of introducing their client to healing work that if they feel like they can't do within their own agencies and organizations, there are other people out here throwing balloons.
Yes.
I love that. And creating joy. And so maybe even being able to say, hey, have you thought about doing trauma-informed weight training? Or have you thought about a birth doula or even a death doula if you're a hospice social worker? And being able to collaborate with folks like you who are doing this very needed work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah, I so enjoyed this. I'm just cheesing. My cheeks hurt. But we are coming to our last question. And I'm curious, you know, part of your bio said that you are committed to helping your clients live their best lives. And so what advice could you give our audience about helping our clients live their best life? Like, what does that mean, helping your client live their best life?
You know, it's the one, it's like if people ask me, well, what are you like, what's the thing you guard the most? For me, it's peace, right? Can you live in your peace? I will die on that hill. And when I talk to clients about that, right, it's this hunger, they're hungry for peace, right? They're hungry to be in their body and to just for maybe 5 minutes of the day, not struggle with the anxiety or the PTSD or the panic attacks that they've had, right? And so when I'm talking to other colleagues, you know, we talk about what does it feel like to create or to give clients tools to be able to create a bigger availability of peace in their life so that they can create different, they can make different decisions, make different agreements with themselves. And a lot of times we talk about opposite action, right? The action of what I want to do versus what I need or is the difference of what my body wants, right? Like my body and coping mechanisms go here, you know, it's easy as drinking a glass of water. I know that sounds so cliche, but sometimes that's how it goes. And so for me, we're talking about building a bigger bubble of peace. And that is like, if you have that in your life, it'll transform you. There's something about the calm that comes over your soul. And you're like, okay, now that this does feel like my best life. I'm not saying that that's easy to obtain. I'm just saying that is when we're talking about how do we create that. I think it's so important that we're not driving towards anything. Just maybe it's 2 minutes of I felt calm today. And sometimes that can transform our lives. So
I agree. And when you were talking, I was just even thinking, if that's the goal, like if we're doing a treatment plan, if that's the goal to obtain peace, you know, people who have people-pleasing behaviors or people who have maybe some codependency issues, but if peace is the ultimate goal, the other itty-bitty, not itty-bitty, but those other things that keep them from that start to kind of fall away. That was such a great answer, Sarah. Mm-hmm. That was such a great answer.
Yeah.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. It has been such a pleasure having you. It really has.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor. I really have. It's just, I feel so special to be on here today.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.